Everybody, welcome to Monday night. My name is Mike Malloy, and how are you doing tonight? Glad to, I'm sorry, I'm still looking at some of the stuff. Mitch McConnell's response today to Barack Obama's excellent idea of taxing American corporations who have spent so much time setting up tax shelters where they could cheat and lie and sneak and steal. Oh, all legally, of course. You know, all legally. But still, sneak and cheat and lie and steal. Just because something is legal doesn't make it ethical or moral. We all know that. So Obama comes up with the plan. We'll talk about it tonight, and you can hear what he has to say in his own words. Already Mitch McConnell is declaring that the President of the United States has determined corporations are going to have a tax increase. God damn, you gotta love these Republicans, don't you? Oh, Lord have mercy. Anyway, we get around to that. Condoleezza Rice better start, or better stop going anywhere. First Stanford University, now fourth graders? Questioning her about her former boss's torture techniques? Huh? Rice was at the Jewish primary day school in Washington, D.C. Was that today? Was it today? I think it was today. And she was talking there. She was talking about her, quote, love of Israel, end quote, according to the Washington Post. And she then took some questions, and an enterprising fourth grader from Bethesda, Maryland, came up with a really, really, really good question. Now, paraphrasing, the question was, what did she, Condoleezza Rice, think about the things President Obama's administration was saying about the methods that the Bush crime family had used to get information from detainees? What about that, Ms. Former Secretary? Rice said to the students, and these are fourth graders, right? She said she was reluctant to criticize Obama, and then she said this, quote, let me just say that President Bush was very clear that he wanted to do everything he could to protect the country. After September 11th, we wanted to protect the country. But he was also very clear that we would do nothing that was against the law or against our obligations internationally. So the president was only willing to authorize policies that were legal in order to protect the country. And I hope you understand that it was a very difficult time. We were all so terrified of another attack on the country. September 11th was the worst day of my life in government, watching 3,000 Americans die. Even under those most difficult circumstances, the president was not prepared to do something illegal. And I hope people understand that we were trying to protect the country. You notice a repeating phrase in there, don't you? We were trying to protect the country. That's why we tortured. But, of course, that's a filthy lie. And the shoe lady knows it. Everyone should know it now. Even knuckle-dragging right-wingers should know it. All the mouthpieces on Fox and in the right-wing blathering class in this country, whether they're on radio or television, they all know it too. But they figure, and they figure correctly, that their brain-dead listeners and viewers don't know it. So, even fourth graders get censored before Ms. Rice is allowed to take questions. The student's mother, who asked this question, said her son had effectively been censored by school officials who had told him he could not use the word torture. You see, the questions were screened in advance. You can't have any snotty-ass little fourth grader, right, asking the former Secretary of the United States of, by God, America about torture. Whoa! So the student's question was effectively scrubbed. The original question, according to Mom, was, if you would work for Obama's administration, would you push for torture? Out of the mouths of children, right? Mom said they wanted him to soften it and take out the word torture, but the essence of it was the same. End quote. Mom. Well, not quite, but I understand what Mom is saying there. Far be it from your average mother to want her fourth grader to ask a question of the former Secretary of State that may get the fourth grader killed. You know, the school bus might mysteriously explode on the way home. Don't want that to happen, right? So no matter where Condoleezza Rice goes now, Stanford University, the dorms, middle school classroom is, no, fourth grade is not even middle school. That's elementary school. It is fun to watch her past continue to haunt her. Now, this is the same former Secretary of State the other day who, of course, indicted herself for conspiracy to violate the law when she said that, well, all I did was pass the information on that came from der Leader, Mein Führer, I'm sorry. They came from the president. All right. The Supreme Court. I'm kind of hoping against hope that Barack Obama will nominate the woman that got got oh my God that got what's his name all upset. You remember Anita Hill? Wouldn't that be great to see Anita Hill nominated so that Clarence Thomas, oh God, I'm just thinking about that. That would be wonderful. But that probably is not going to happen. However, this did happen. Last year, there was a law professor at Fordham University who wanted to show his class how readily available private information is and how easy it is to get it from the internet. So he gave his class a group project. They were told to collect personal information from the web about him, about the instructor. And as reported on the American Bar Association webpage, this year, after U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Fat Tony Scalia made public comments that seemingly may have questioned the need for more protection of private information, the professor assigned the same project, except this time Scalia was the subject. Now, the class then turned in a 15-page dossier that included not only Scalia's home address, home phone number, and home value, but his food preferences, what movies he likes to see, his wife's personal email address, and photos of his grandchildren. Now, all of this, the professor said, this was all available, all publicly available, all for free. Nobody had to subscribe to any of these weird little, we'll find out everything about your fill in the blank that you want to know. No. This was just all readily available, and his students found it on the internet. Now, Scalia, of course, isn't very happy about what he sees as an invasion of his privacy. He issued a statement saying, quote, Professor Rydenberg's exercise is an example of perfectly legal, abominably poor judgment. Since he was not teaching a course in judgment, I presume he felt no responsibility to display any. End quote. Well, my goodness, what's the matter, Fat Tony? This guy really pisses me off. He's one of those Society of Jesus, there's another organization that he belongs to that is extreme. They're kind of the school of thought that believes Jesus was, the whole story of Jesus is all about torture and flaying and blood and beating and scarring and scabbing And that consequently everybody should accept that idea of Jesus. Scalia just really, really irritates the hell out of me. Anyway, the American Bar Association Journal asked Scalia for a comment about all this and went through the court's media information office. And, of course, Scalia deigned not to answer.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Oh, and by the way, that the branch of the Catholic Church that Scalia belongs to is the Mel Gibson torture branch. What was that movie? The about Christ? The Last Temptation? No, not The Last Temptation. What was it? The one? Huh? Passion of the
Flaying of the Christ.
The Flaying of the Christ.
The bloody beating.
The bloody beating of the
1 hour and 52 minutes of the Christ.
Mel Gibson is a very strange.
The Apocalypto of the Christ. Yeah. The little Braveheart thrown in.
Apocalypto is just an unbelievably violent movie. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that ever, anytime, at all, in any sort of film, recordings, fiction, fact. Up to and including, the only exception, of course, would be the death camps in Poland and Germany, during World War II. But Apocalypto was just, but I digress. I was talking about the Mel Gibson, Anthony Fat Tony Scalia Church of Jesus Christ.
I kept waiting for Mad Max to come out of the Thunderdome and run over Christ a few times in one of those roadsters.
But, I totally digress here. So, anyway, today Obama went on the electric TV. Did you see him? And he announced his plans to propose changes to tax policy. Policy that was made into law by that great liberal, Bill Clinton, back towards the end of Clinton's second term, when it was determined that in addition to sending all the jobs out of the country, which is what Bill Clinton effectively did, he would goose the American public with a little extra pat on the ass as he left office by setting the corporations free from paying their share of anything. So now we're talking about their profits. They're based here. They use our laws here. They set up their tacky little fake P.O. box corporation somewhere. And then the profits that they make in Beijing or Bangalore or Ho Chi Minh City or Mexico City or wherever is all theirs. It's all theirs. Why should they share any of, why should they pay anything? You know, the redistribution of wealthy thing, right? Why should they do any of that? These corporations. God, it irritates me. So Obama is, in effect, spanking Bill Clinton's ass with this and saying, boy, did you really screw up? So'd your old lady, you know, she's Secretary of State now, but man, you two screwed up. You really, really, really stuck it in the American, worker and broke it off. Didn't you, Bill? Well, the answer to that is a quick yes. Oh, yes. So, Obama says, all right, here's the deal. No more tax shelters for you rich bastards who, bastards. Obama is too nice to say something like that. He's decided that these tax shelters, overseas tax shelters, the individuals use, you know, the tax havens in the Bahamas or the Cayman Islands, if they continue to do this, if he gets his legislation passed, they'll be guilty of violating U.S. tax laws. Now, as I wrote in my blog today at MikeMalloy.com, watch. Watch how the multi-millionaire right-wing talk show hosts on radio and television just beat and kick the poor, stupid listeners to go out with their teabags again and start yelling about, no, 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 don't tax corporate America. No, no, no. These are people that have no money, no jobs, health care available, no retirement funds, no way to educate their kids. Jobs are disappearing. But because they worship at the altar of Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these clowns, watch, they'll probably be in the streets protesting Obama's plan to ease their burden, you see. So anyway, if Obama's plan becomes law, these filthy companies who hide their profits in international accounts will have to kick in the billions starting, you know, not retroactively, not all they have ripped off from the United States in the past 10 years from taxpayers in the past 15 years, actually. No, 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 no. Just starting fresh, starting all brand new. Now, here's the problem. If, this legislation is going to have a difficult time getting through Congress. But how, Mike? The Democrats control the House and the Senate. Exactly. Exactly. There are so many Democrats in the House and the Senate who are scum and swine. They're like Zell Miller Democrats, Democrats in name only, kind of like the Republicans now are accusing Spector of being a Republican in name only. But these Democrats will, who are wholly owned subsidiaries of these mega corporations, will do everything in their power to stop Barack Obama's attempt to bring a little fairness back into the game. This is going to be great sport to watch, isn't it, huh? This will be a good indicator of the Democratic members of the House and the Senate that have to be removed from office peacefully and legally. President Obama in his own words about this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I saw the boss come walking down along the factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago. And I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any sleep at night. Just as long as fate is out there busting somebody else's bubbles, everything is gone.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Oh, way up to here. That's how much. All right. So, Obama had a briefing today, or what did he do? Was it a briefing? I think it was. Yeah, he was out there with Geithner and a couple other, one other person, I think. Not sure who the other person was. Talking about his plan. And, you know, I'm just curious what the teabagging, trolls are going to say about this. How do you protest companies legally avoiding paying billions in taxes through overseas, accounts and other sneaky practices? Now the answer, I guess, that will come from the knuckle draggers is, hey, goddammit, it's legal! It's legal! Not like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton lied! You know, that's probably going to be what the response is. But see, none of this is illegal. It is just creepy and sneaky and vile and hateful and very anti-American, very anti-working man and woman. It's what corporations do because they need to own everything. They need to make all the money. They need all the goodies. And the workers can kiss their asses. It's very simple. That's the corporate rule. So I wonder what the baby Jesus, that would be Hannity, and El Oxymoron, that would be Limbaugh, and this crazy man here in Atlanta, Neil Bortz. I wonder what these, and Michael the Wiener, Savage, what are they going to say? How are they going to express their outrage to this attempt to rightfully collect corporate taxes?
Let's begin with a simple premise. Nobody likes paying taxes, particularly in times of economic stress. But most Americans meet their responsibilities because they understand that it's an obligation of citizenship, necessary to pay the costs of our common defense and our mutual well-being. And yet, even as most American citizens and businesses meet these responsibilities, there are others who are shirking theirs. And many are aided and abetted by a broken tax system, written by well-connected lobbyists on behalf of well-heeled interests and individuals. It's a tax code full of corporate loopholes that makes it perfectly legal for companies to avoid paying their fair share. It's a tax code that makes it all too easy for a small number of individuals and companies to abuse overseas tax havens to avoid paying any taxes at all.
Uh-huh.
And it's a tax code that says you should pay lower taxes if you create a job in Bangalore, India, than if you create one in Buffalo, New York.
Isn't that nice? See, that's courtesy of Bill Clinton. Let's try to keep everything real on the Malloy Show here. Yes, the law was written by Republicans, but it was written during the long, arduous reign of Bill Let's Destroy America, also, just like the Republicans, Clinton. Clinton signed this into law. Now, what do you suppose the Billster was thinking about when he did that? What? He was a Democrat, right? I mean, he claims to have been a Democrat, right? Come on. We know about the Billster. He was no more of a Democrat than Karl Rove is a Democrat. Clinton was just very slick. You know, they didn't call him Slick Willie for nothing. Just very slick, very greasy, very oily. You know, all shucks, folks, on the one hand, while he just rips us open with the other. And if you're a Democrat and you believe the Democrats, especially those elected to office, walk on water, then I feel sorry for you, and you should be pitied and shamed and cast out of the campfire. Obama then explained why he wanted to stop corporate tax loopholes that cost Americans tens of billions of dollars a year, not to mention thousands of good-paying jobs.
I want to see our companies remain the most competitive in the world.
Oh.
But the way to make sure that happens is not to reward our companies for moving jobs off our shores or transferring profits to overseas tax havens. This is something that I talked about again and again during the course of the campaign. The way we make our businesses competitive is not to reward American companies operating overseas with a roughly 2% tax rate on foreign profits, a rate that costs taxpayers tens of billions of dollars a year. The way to make American businesses competitive is not to let some citizens and businesses dodge their responsibilities while ordinary Americans pick up the slack.
Well, amen.
That's why today I'm announcing a set of proposals to crack down on illegal overseas tax evasion, close loopholes, and make it more profitable for companies to create jobs here in the United States.
Well, what a radical idea. Jesus God, I think Sarah Palin was right. He's a goddamn socialist. He wants to redistribute the wealth. Huh? And Joe the plumber was right. Oh, my God. He wants to make it more profitable for companies to create jobs here in the United States. Oh, be still, my fluttering heart. He says the way we make our businesses competitive is not to reward American companies operating overseas with a roughly 2% tax rate on foreign profits, because that costs taxpayers here tens of billions of dollars a year. And you know what is also so irritating? So many of these corporations, when things started to get rough, after NAFTA, when things started to get rough for American workers, These predatory sons of bitches would go into towns like, oh, I don't know, pick a name, Bowling Green, Ohio, or Paducah, Kentucky, or Savannah, Georgia, or wherever. They would go into these small to medium-sized cities and sit down with the local powers that be, the mayors and the chambers of commerce and the, you know, the little organizations and panels set up to bring in industry to the towns that were just dying. And these corporations sit there and say, okay, yeah, we'll bring a widget factory in here. But here's what you have to do. A, you got to give us the land to build the factory. B, you got to suspend all these pesky environmental laws. One of the discharges from our factory will be lead. And we don't want to hear any snotty remarks about the EPA and all those rules and regs. Now, third, you're going to have to abate our taxes. That means don't charge us any for the first decade. No business tax. Now, in return, we'll open up a widget factory here and employ 112 people. How's that? And, of course, these small towns, small cities would just go berserk and say, yes, yes, where do we sign? Yes. The kicker being, of course, that when the 10 years were about to expire with all the tax breaks and abatements, right before that was to expire, the company would, that's right, up and move. In so many instances, further into a depressed area in the United States, or, and this is even more fun, to China, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, Mexico, an emerging African country, emerging from 400 years of colonial, I know, Eastern Europe, any place they could go, you see. The way to make American businesses competitive is not to let some citizens and businesses dodge their responsibilities while ordinary Americans pick up the slack. Wow, that sounds like it's right out of the Karl Marx playbook, doesn't it? Son of a bitch. You know, I think Sarah Palin was right. Then Obama detailed his budgetary crackdown on the corporate tax evaders. And again, what are the neocons going to say about this? No! Keep the jobs overseas! Let them hide their money overseas! Where's my tea bag?
4 years, we've talked about ending tax breaks for companies that ship jobs overseas and giving tax breaks to companies that create jobs here in America. That's what our budget will finally do. We will stop letting American companies that create jobs overseas take deductions on their expenses when they do not pay any American taxes on their profits.
Oh.
And we will use the savings to give tax cuts to companies that are investing in research and development here at home so that we can jumpstart job creation, foster innovation, and enhance America's competitiveness.
Oh.
4 years, we've talked about shutting down overseas tax havens that let companies set up operations to avoid paying taxes in America. That's what our budget will finally do. On the campaign, I used to talk about the outrage of a building in the Cayman Islands that had over 12,000 businesses claim this building as their headquarters. And I've said before, either this is the largest building in the world or the largest tax scam in the world. And I think the American people know which it is.
Well, we do if you keep hammering. Just keep hammering, President Obama. 95% of Americans don't know what you're talking about because we have been so beaten into submission. 24/7, across the fruited plain, coast to coast, border to border, the filthy rich right-wing talk show hosts have hammered and hammered and hammered the average American consumer into a lump of motionless protoplasm. So keep talking, Barack. Keep talking.
Stock and shirts in a Walmart store, just like the ones we made before. Except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin, or the shape of their eyes, or the shape I'm in? Should I hate them for having our jobs today? No, I hate the men sent the jobs away.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. You know, it would take, numbers I've read, it would take anywhere from $35 to $50 billion to establish a universal health care for all the kids in this country. Every kid for the rest of that kid's life, as long as that kid is a kid. I guess that would be up to age, what, 18, 21, whatever. And a couple of months ago, there was a big debate in D.C. about the viability of committing $35 billion for children's health care, right? And yet the Obama administration apparently has had no problem following through on what the Bush crime family did and providing 20 times that to rescue the financial services industry. The people who have so screwed everything up in this country that it's almost unrecognizable any longer as, you know, the free enterprise system, right, booby? $35 billion. So here, according to the numbers crunched by the Obama administration, over the next 10 years, $210 billion will come in if everything remains static with these filthy corporations, if they are their tax shelters and their tax havens are taken away from them. And why should they have them? Somebody tell me. You know, I get so sick of hearing these right-wing dumbasses talking about, well, if you tax the companies, they won't create jobs. Hey, you morons. Are you not paying attention? These are corporations who've sent all the jobs to Bangalore and Beijing and Mexico City. Are you out of your... Well, never mind. Ask an obvious question. You'll get blank stares. Oh, my God. So Obama's plan is simply to undo the damage that the Republicans and Bill Clinton did a decade ago. No more free ride, boys. Sorry. Sorry, you have drained us. You have ruined a community after community. You have destroyed it, you predatory bastards. You absolutely have killed the goose that laid your golden egg. You just couldn't get enough, could you, corporate America? Couldn't get enough. You went insane to the point where you paid your executives for failing. As a matter of fact, the more they failed, the more your boards of directors were willing to pay them extra money. And what's going on out here? Well, out here in Jesus land, you know, people are unemployed. Families are breaking up because so many men now all of a sudden can't stand the fact that their wives have become the primary wage earners. Ooh, is that causing problems here in ballsy United States of America? What? My old lady's going to work? Oh, I ain't gonna stand for none of that. That's the corporations have done this. And yet, the Fox News, gobblers and the people that listen to, the right-wing talkers are more than willing. Last month was a classic example to get out here with their goddamn tea bags and shake them around at each other and carry signs that depict Barack Obama as being Castro or Lenin, not John, or Hitler, right? And just remember, people like Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and Bortz and the rest of these bastards, this is why they make 10, 15, 20, 30, 50, $200 million to provide cover for these corporations, to get on the air every single day and give these corporations the protection they need by misdirecting, misleading, lying, sneaking, telling their audiences, well, Obama wants to take all your money. He's going to redistribute the wealth. That's what he's going to do, you know, for you people out there making, you know, $40,000 a year. Rush Limbaugh spends that much on a hooker. You people out there making $40,000 and not necessarily one of legal age. You people out there making $40,000 a year. You'll lose everything now, huh? Jesus, God. Obama says we will stop letting American companies that create jobs overseas take deductions on their expenses overseas when they don't pay any American taxes on their profits. You see, this is the way it works with predatory capitalism. It's all about profit until it's not. And then it's about, okay, you taxpayers pick up the losses. We got important things to do. And the banking industry is doing it again. And they're going to continue to do it. Have you heard the latest? They are cooking the books a little bit to make it look like all of a sudden these banks are profitable when they're not. And they're saying to the government, we changed our minds. You know, we've gotten $1 trillion out of you. We don't want any more. Because you know why? Because somebody's going to come in here and tell us we can't keep screwing the American public. And that's no fair. And it's no fun. So Obama wants to stop letting corporations that create jobs in Bangalore take deductions on their expenses in this country when they don't pay any taxes on any goddamn thing. And the Obama administration then wants to use the savings to give tax cuts to companies that are investing in research and development here at home. So they can what? So they can jumpstart job creation. Enhance America's competitiveness. See what this socialist bastard is doing? Listen to Sarah Palin. Listen to John McCain. Listen to Joe the Plumber. Listen to these people. Oh, my God. Barack Obama wants to jumpstart job creation. He wants to foster innovation. He wants to enhance America's competitiveness. Oh, no. Oh, God, no. Not that. Where's my tea bag? Hey, welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. For people listening to the internet feed, we're playing some Tony Bennett tonight. Love it. Love his music. There is conflicting stories out there tonight. First is the video that's available on YouTube that shows American officers and non-coms encouraging U.S. soldiers to spread the message of Jesus to the Afghans that we are blowing up and killing, who are, of course, predominantly Muslim. The video footage appeared on Al Jazeera. You would not find this, of course, on CBS, ABC, NBC, MSNBC, blah, blah, blah. Military chaplains stationed in the U.S. air base at Bagram also were filmed with Bibles printed in the country's two main languages, Pashto and Dari, that the soldiers are to hand out. Now, I don't know when they're supposed to do that, when they're kicking in doors or when they are, out on patrol fighting for their lives. When are they supposed to hand out Bibles? When they're being attacked at a fire base someplace in the mountains of Afghanistan, are they supposed to wave a white flag and say, hold on, you know, like in the Tom and Jerry cartoons? Hold on, stop. Okay, here's a Bible. No. It's a Bible. It's all about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And if you would accept him, you see, you wouldn't be fighting. You would just very quietly and willingly give us your country. In one recorded sermon, Lieutenant Colonel Gary Hensley, the chief of the U.S. military chaplains in Afghanistan, the head dude, the priest above all priests. Well, he's not a priest, but, you know, he's seen in the video telling soldiers that as followers of Jesus, they all have a responsibility to be witnesses for him. He says, quote, "The special forces guys, they hunt men, basically. You know, we do the same thing as Christians. We hunt people for Jesus. We do. We hunt them down. You know, get the hound to heaven after them. So we get them into the kingdom. That's what we do. That's our business." The hounds of heaven? Oh, what a nice image that conjures up, huh? No, Lieutenant Colonel, I beg to difference. Your job is to kill people and break things until the people we are killing and the things we are breaking has reached a point where the government or the warlords of the people we're killing and the things we're breaking say, "Enough! Enough! God damn it! Where do we sue for peace?" That's your responsibility, Lieutenant Colonel. Your responsibility is to help your men kill and not be killed. That's it. Your responsibility is not to go out with Bibles written in Pashto or Dari and grab the nearest Taliban and say, "Psst, come here. Listen, you hear that barking? That's the hounds of heaven." The video actually was shot about a year ago by Brian Hughes, a documentary filmmaker, former member of the U.S. military who spent several days in Bagram. Now, Bagram, of course, is also the place where we torture people to death. That's where we torture people to death. So it is a Bible distribution point and a torture people to death point. Do you have a problem with that? Isn't that what Christianity is all about? Isn't that the Church of Mel Gibson? Isn't that Opus Dei? Isn't that, you know? So Bagram Air Force Base, where we have, and I don't think we will ever know, you and I will never know, those who need to know, where we have numerous catacombs of torture, disease, death, and destruction, where we take people that we have been given by the Taliban or the Northern Alliance, remember them, and we take them into these dark holes and we get them to confess. And you thought they were confessing that there was a link between Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Well, actually, Al-Qaeda right up into Saddam Hussein's bedroom, right? No. What they are confessing is their love for Jesus Christ, apparently. At least that's what these preachers in the military want them to say. In other footage, in this documentary, captured at Bagram Air Base, Sergeant John Watt, a soldier who is set to become a military chaplain, is seen giving thanks for the work that his church in the U.S. did in getting Bibles printed and sent to Afghanistan. He's heard saying during the Bible study class, quote, "I also want to praise God because my church collected some money to get Bibles for Afghanistan. They came and sent the money out." Doesn't this play right into the charge that the U.S. forces are crusaders? Isn't this just going back to the 11th and 12th and 13th centuries? Isn't this just a continuation of the Holy War? Does anybody actually believe that there are not elements in command and control positions in the United States military who do see this as a confrontation between our God, who obviously is much bigger than their God, and we have to kill them? Isn't that abundantly clear? Who was the guy? Was it Ray Odierno, the guy who's in charge now in Iraq? Isn't he the one? No, he's not the one. Who was the general who said the face of Satan appeared over Somalia and they had to go in there and kill the devils or something? I mean, this guy, it's not Odierno, it's somebody else, somebody who might have lost his command, but certainly didn't lose his rank. And is now, he heads up something in the Pentagon. Who is that guy? Somebody will email it to me. But is this what the United States military is supposed to be doing? Are we serious about this? Is this not insane? Is this not crazy? One assumes that there are Jews in the U.S. military. One assumes there might even be Muslims. One assumes there might be atheists. What are these soldiers supposed to do? Are these soldiers supposed, or are they given a dispensation? Well, soldier, you're a Jew, so you don't have to carry a Holy Bible. well, not the Old Testament part anyway, you know, and you don't believe in our Lord and Jesus Christ as Redeemer and Savior, and, you know, you're going to burn to hell for that, but here, take your rifle, soldier, and go out and kill something. I mean, what kind of madness is this? Unbelievable. Pentagon officials have so far not responded to a copy of the footage provided to them. Now, that's the first story. Here's the second one. Now, everyone who cares to see the video has seen it. It's on YouTube. It's on Al Jazeera. It's all over out there. Anybody can find it. U.S. troops giving Bibles or holding Bible study. It's all out there. So here's what this is what the military says. Quote, U.S. military denied today it has allowed soldiers to try to convert Afghans to Christianity after a television network showed pictures of soldiers with Bibles translated into local languages. It's all an illusion. You people don't know what you're seeing there. You know, our soldiers are out there to kill things and break stuff up. That's what soldiers do. We do not go out there and try to convince. That's up to the missionaries. We're not missionaries. Whatever you saw on that videotape from Al Jazeera is obviously doctored and fake. It has nothing to do with reality. Amen. And our Lord Jesus Christ, follow, follow, hip, hip, boom. What? General Order Number 1 from the U.S. Military Central Command forbids active-duty troops, including all those serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, from trying to convert people to their religion, considered a crime in many Muslim countries. General Order Number 1. Don't do it, boys. U.S. military spokeswoman Major Jennifer Willis said the comments from the sermon that's on the videotape were taken out of context. And chaplains were told to make clear to soldiers they could not proselytize while serving. The Bibles had been, according to the spokeswoman, the Bibles had been mailed to a soldier by a church back home in the U.S. and were never distributed as far as we know. It's all just whatever you saw on the videotape on that heathen Al Jazeera network. That's not real. That's not real. Just listen to your commanding officer. He'll tell you what's real. That's not real.
I don't care if it rains or freezes, long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car. Through my trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far. Riding down a thoroughfare with a nose up in the
uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Okay, we're just about finished with church here on the Malloy program tonight. I know this is very irritating to some people who try their damnedest to listen to this program, even though they are believers, and you know, we might be aligned fairly closely politically, but we part company on this religious stuff. So I appreciate your patience and your indulgence. I also know I have a lot of people listening to this program who are atheists, or if not atheists, certainly so-called non-believers into religious superstition or belief systems. So one more little bit here. And then church will be closed for this portion of the Malloy program. By the way, it was evangelical Christian Lieutenant General William Boykin who saw Satan in the clouds over Somalia. Now think about that for a minute. This is a guy, Lieutenant General, that's 3 stars, man. I mean, that's the only rank higher than that is general, and then you get into, well, I don't know, Eisenhower range. But William Boykin, he was also quoted as saying a Muslim warlord in Somalia had an idol for a god. There are demons in the clouds over Somalia. Kill them. Just unbelievable stuff. Now, one of our listeners, Bob, writes, Mike, great show tonight. Thank you. My local paper printed this letter for me today. I'm no practicing Christian, but Jesus was a good guy, and their Bible contains some wisdom. This is what it said to the editor. Jesus Christ was nearly perfect in his commitment to nonviolence. In all the biblical stories, I believe the only time Jesus is said to have become outraged and violent was in response to the money changers who set up their tables in the temple in Jerusalem. He overturned the tables of these practitioners of usury and drove them from the temple. Today we have capitalists proclaiming that they have the right in a supposedly free market to charge whatever the market will bear, whether it's the price to borrow on your credit card to cover an essential cost of living or the price you are charged in the healthcare for profit world we Americans currently live in, whatever the market will bear. I don't think, Bob writes, Jesus would have found this acceptable. We shouldn't either. Profit gained at undue or excessive cost to others is not ethical. It's not moral. It's not acceptable. The market must be regulated to keep it ethical. I'm quite sure Jesus would agree that we need to pay taxes to fund a strong, ethical, regulatory government. I also know where he'd say to get the money. Quote, freely you have received, freely give, end quote, Matthew 10:8. Put another way, tax the filthy rich. Bob. Okay, church is dismissed. Speaking of torture and the Bush crime family, in an interview posted today, so says rawstory.com, Alberto Gonzalez, former Bush attorney general, said that because the use of torture, quote, may be necessary, end quote, in the future, the Obama administration erred in disclosing the Bush administration's, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques, end quote. Gonzalez was taking part in an interview by MSNBC's Dan Abrams, along with former Bush Attorney General John Ashcroft. The session was conducted at American Jewish University last week. Full transcript is available out there. Just type in Dan Abrams plus Alberto Gonzalez, and you will get it. Abrams repeatedly asked Alberto if the techniques that the Bush administration approved amounted to torture, and whether President Barack Obama was correct in releasing those memos. Gonzalez said he disagreed with Obama's decision. He then said, quote, it does provide, in my judgment, important information to the enemy. Important information to the enemy. And that important information is that we torture, therefore they may torture, therefore, well, you know. He went on to say, and then secondly, to say that we have now discontinued these techniques, well, they may be necessary in the future, and by disclosing it means you take them off the table and they can never be used again. End quote. He was asked if the techniques that the CIA used on detainees, which included partial drowning and keeping detainees, you know, I'm not going to go through it again. He was asked if these were torture, and Gonzalez didn't want to answer. He said, quote, I think the U.S. government provided advice to CIA interrogators based upon the best legal reasoning by the lawyers in the Department of Justice. Was it torture when that advice was given? No. Were the interrogations harsh? Yes. Did they save lives? Absolutely. Do you like to hear me ask questions and answer them myself? Of course you do, Dan Abrams. Still, Gonzalez hedged when Dan asked if he thought the techniques were still considered legal. And Gonzalez answered, Dan, when I served in the administration, the position of the administration was that under certain conditions and circumstances, the techniques would be lawful. Oh, I see. If I am hungry and my child is starving, I may rob a bank. Of course, it's not called robbing a bank. It's called enhanced deposit removal techniques. It's never called robbing. That would be politically incorrect. So the next time I need some money to pay Molly's tuition, I think I will make an enhanced withdrawal from a bank, any bank.
Standing up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
Ah, 25 before the hour. After the next break, we're going to open up the lines and take some calls. The number is 877-996-2556 or 877-99-MALLOY. Let's see, a couple more items here. Oh, yeah, a member of the United Arab Emirates, the royal family. Sheikh Issa bin Zayed Al Nahyan, how's that, huh? A member of the royal family in the UAE is undergoing investigation following the release of a video which depicts him torturing a man. An American businessman, Bassam Nabulsi, smuggled the video out of that country. And attorneys for this businessman say in a letter to the country's highest justice over there in the UAE, that the attorneys possess over 2 hours of video showing Issa torturing at least 25 people. These are the kinds of videos you see that Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and Gonzalez and the rest of these vultures would sit around watching. It's torture chic. It's the big thing. It's been the big thing for about the past 5 or 6 years, unbeknownst to you and me, because we don't travel on those circles. But it's torture chic by a sheikh. Or by the vice president of the United States. Well, not that he did any of the actual wet work, but this guy, United Arab Emirates. Now, isn't that one of the countries that the Bush crime family was going to turn over control of our ports to? Among other things, right? The attorney who is representing this American businessman said, quote, I have more than 2 hours of video footage showing Sheikh Issa's involvement in the torture of more than 25 people. A clip of the 45-minute video is available online. You can find it. Well, go to rawstory.com, and there'll be a link there. It contains mild violence, but does not carry the most offensive portions of the original. And the video was published on YouTube on May 1st, 2009. So you can go to YouTube and see it. With what it says here, quote, with a private security officer assisting, Sheikh Issa bin Zayed Al Nahyan is seen stuffing sand into an Afghan's mouth. As the man pleads and whimpers, he is beaten with a nailed board, burned in the genitals with a cigarette lighter, shocked with a cattle prod, and led to believe he would be shot. Salt is then poured into his wounds. In the end, the victim can muster up only weak moans as an SUV is repeatedly driven over him. And the man survived and has declined to press charges. Now, you may ask, what's an Afghan doing in the UAE? Immigrant labor. Afghans are to the royal family in UAE what Mexicans are to contractors and builders in this country. I don't know. I hate to report on stories like that. I really do. It sounds like something out of medieval times. Well, it is. But the United States, certain members of the Bush crime family who promoted this, you see, you lead by example, right? We withdrew from treaties that prevent this sort of thing, agreements that said, no, you don't torture, you don't do certain things, even in when you're in a battle with your enemy, you still, there's certain things you don't do. You can kill your enemy, but you don't burn his genitals or, but the United States, under the firm hand of Dick Cheney and the rest of these monstrous sons of bitches, decided that, you know, it's no fun just, you know, sending troops into the mountains of Afghanistan or into the deserts of Iraq to kill and do stuff. So let's capture them and torture them, but, oh my God, make sure that you videotape it, because back here in Washington, D.C., it gets very, very boring, especially in the summer when the mosquitoes come out, and we would love to have something to entertain us of an evening. Unbelievable. The U.S. government, I love this, this is from Friday from the Washington Post. Here's the headline. The U.S. government is abandoning espionage law charges against two former lobbyists for a pro-Israel advocacy group, federal officials announced this morning. Prosecutors said they will ask a judge to dismiss the case against Stephen J. Rosen and Keith Wiseman because a series of court decisions had made it unlikely they would win convictions. The two are former lobbyists for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. Rosen and Weissman were charged in 2005 with conspiring to obtain classified information and pass it to journalists and the Israeli government. And on and on and on. Now, this is, so it's going to be dropped, as these sorts of things usually are when it involves Israel. Now, if it involves spying for the Palestinians, oh, jumping Jesus, or jumping Allah, or jumping Muhammad, or jumping somebody, kind of a double standard, you know, sort of different rules for the backers of Israel than from those for the backers of Palestine, right? But this is the Jane Harman scandal, huh? And as the May 11th issue of The Nation says, could it be more embarrassing? Jane Harman, the hawkish pro-Israel California Democrat, tells a suspected Israeli spy that she'll do what she can to quash an espionage trial for two former officials of AIPAC, and then ends the conversation by saying, this conversation doesn't exist. Ah, Jane, but it does. And it was caught on tape by a court-sanctioned legal FBI wiretap that got leaked to and published by Congressional Quarterly. Oops! Jane? Apparently about 4 years ago, the FBI and the Justice Department began investigating Jane Harman. The charge? Well, the charge was she had told AIPAC she would help kill the indictment of Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman if AIPAC would help her get appointed as chair of the House Intelligence Committee. Oh, my God. Jane Harman, huh? Jane Harman. Anyway, Congressional Quarterly's Jeff Stein, who wrote about this, said the FBI investigation of Harman was halted by none other than Alberto Gonzalez, who did Harman a favor in order to secure her support for the illegal, warrantless National Security Administration surveillance programs. In particular, Alberto Gonzalez wanted Representative Jane Harman, Democrat of California, to help suppress a New York Times report on the program. Harman denies any wrongdoing. Oh, no, not me. And what she actually did is murky, although the New York Times does report that she called the paper's Washington bureau chief and urged him not to run the story. Now mixed up in all this is a man named Chaim Saban, the billionaire mogul and Democratic fundraiser in California, who reportedly lobbied Jane Harman to kill the AIPAC investigation. Well, guess what? Jane succeeded! My damn Jane! Woohoo! Of course, you're not going to get your chairmanship, but it's an ugly story, but it's something that Oh, what's her name? I feel very, very embarrassed here. The woman who was running against Harman, and who went, you know, whose candidacy, what was her name? Marcy Winograd. That's her. Winograd or Winograd? Winograd? Who, by the way, happens to be Jewish. But she tried to bring this out Congresswoman Jane Harman, during the campaign. And of course, nobody would listen. The only people who would listen were the people with deep pockets and a lot of money who would make sure that Jane Harman got reelected. But here you have a Democratic member of the United States House of Representatives who interferes. Is that not obstruction of justice? Is it possible to see that as obstruction of justice? If so, why is Jane Harman showing up for work every day? Why is she not being charged with a felony? Anybody have any suggestions about that? I think she should be. But anyway, the government is abandoning these charges of spying against Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman. The prosecutors say, well, a series of court decisions have made it unlikely they'll win convictions. Oh, really? Is that a reason to drop charges? Because it's unlikely to win convictions. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that opens up a whole new defense, I guess, for people convicted of all sorts of crimes. Your Honor, we don't think the prosecution can win a conviction, so we ask that you dismiss the charges. Oh, okay. Case dismissed.
Flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. The number here is 877-996-2556. There is more to the, as there always is, to the Harman AIPAC espionage story. David Bromwich, writing at Huffington Post, I believe today, points out that the Justice Department announced that the charges would be dropped 2 days before the opening of the 2009 AIPAC convention. He writes, one may have noticed earlier that the Obama administration and the government of Israel play each other on a tight clock. Israel withdrew from its devastating assault on Gaza only hours before the inauguration of Barack Obama, and the administration has let off the AIPAC lobbyists in time to be considered a sentimental encourager and not a spoiler of the mutual uplift that marks the annual AIPAC gathering. Oh, my God. Bromwich writes, we are told that FBI agents poured substantial resources into the case, and the decision to seek a dismissal infuriated many within the law enforcement agency. And it goes on. You can find this at Huffington Post. David Bromwich, B-R-O-M-W-I-C-H. It's just astonishing stuff. Whatever intrigue goes on between the Obama administration, the Justice Department, and AIPAC and the government of Israel is kind of just a continuation of the sorts of intrigues that have gone on since Harry Truman was the first, I believe, country on earth to recognize the establishment of the State of Israel back in 1948. So it's just a continuation of the policy that never, ever, 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 ever changes. The part that is irritating beyond what these sorts of stories normally are, to me, is the Jane Harman bit. Because Harman apparently agreed to help Alberto Gonzalez defend the Bush crime family's warrantless wiretapping program. Do you understand that? Of course you do. I mean, we may be liberals, but we're not all brain dead, right? Here is one of, allegedly one of our own, who is a goddamn spy and co-conspirator with the Bush crime family. That's what she is. Do you get this? Jane Harmon, and I think Marcy Winograd talked about this when she was running for Harmon's seat. Harmon deliberately, consciously, willfully agreed to obstruct justice. I mean, and to go one step further and use whatever influence she had, which turned out to be zero, in getting the story killed by the New York Times. But she was willing to do it, even up to the point of saying, this conversation doesn't exist. She's seen too many, like Cheney, too many episodes of 24. This conversation doesn't exist. Jane. Shame on you. Now, I realize this is nothing new. I understand that. This is months old. This goes back. Actually, the story goes back 3 or 4 years. And the revelation of Harmon's involvement. This is old stuff. I understand. But today is when the announcement was made that the charges against these two would be dropped. Today in the New York Times. Attorney General Eric Holder was informed that the charges would be dropped and raised no objections. And as David Bromwich writes at Huffington Post, a curious sequence of facts. Holder raised no objections to a decision which was arrived at by prosecutors with the help of two men, a fresh appointee and an interim U.S. attorney, whom he himself sent into the discussion for some purpose. Let us assume he was not displeased with the result that his own men had sought, even against the wishes of the relevant office chief at the FBI. Here's how the New York Times today lets AIPAC immaterialize, disappear. While Mr. Rosen and Mr. Wiseman trafficked in facts, ideas, and rumor, they had done so with the full awareness of officials in the United States and Israel, who found they often helped lubricate the wheels of decision-making between two close but sometimes quarrelsome friends. Oh, my God. Were ever smoother words uttered about spying? But Jane Harmon, oh, shame on you, Jane. Shame, shame, shame. You were willing to obstruct justice and possibly sell out your country in order to get a committee chairmanship appointment. Wow, Jane. Hot damn, man. You are certainly a liberal Democrat, aren't you? Huh? You little sweetie. Oh, my God. And now, of course, the bad person in all this, right, Jane, is Nancy Pelosi, who said, no, I don't think so. Jane. Well, if the people in Jane Harmon's district come out of the ether, which there's a good chance they won't, but if they do, and Marcy Winograd runs again, perhaps it'll be time for Jane to retire and go do something else. Maybe she can run a kibbutz in one of the settlements in the occupied territories, you think? Or am I being too harsh? Felonious obstruction of justice. My terms. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a talk show host. Obstruction of justice or an attempt to obstruct justice. Wouldn't that come under the RICO statutes, wouldn't it? Working in concert with other people to obstruct justice. Gosh. Jane, you certainly dug yourself a deep hole, but not to worry. Your friends in AIPAC and, what's his name? Haim Saban will take good care of you.
the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I just can't get over this APAC spy case story and Jane Harmon and James Alvarez, who is a former senator from South Dakota and is currently a lawyer practicing there, author of a couple of books. Has a column about this in Counterpunch, counterpunch.org. Just go to counterpunch.org and read what, it's very quick, what James Alvarez wrote about this. Oh, my God. All right, telephone calls. Yeah, this is Talk Radio. Tom is calling from Bowhead City, Arizona. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hey, Mike. The word of the day is sycophant, and I am not one of those. Because I love you. I believe me, I'm not fucking up to you or not.
No.
You're great.
Oh, okay.
Listen,
I appreciate it. It's very kind of you to say that. It's okay. you know, it's fine. Now,
it's not my personality though to do that.
I completely understand. No big deal.
Here's
what you need to do to show your love. Become a podcast subscriber.
Oh, I am.
Oh, good. You do love me.
Yeah, I'm one of the high-paying $7.95 a month guys.
Oh, well, then, that's...
And I was going to ask you about that. How often do you update those? Because I've been listening to it 25 times over the weekend.
Which, the commercial?
The last ones. Every one of them.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Every one of your podcasts.
Oh!
I go right in rotation all weekend long as I'm doing other things on my computer.
Well, good. And thanks. I'm kind of funning with you, but thanks, Tom. I'm glad you're a subscriber. We do appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm fully brainwashed, but I'm not a sycophant.
Oh, good. Okay.
But anyway, I told your wife that my dad's an agnostic.
Speaking religiously or politically?
Religiously.
Uh-huh.
He's a staunch Democrat, liberal Democrat, gay marriage, everything.
Right.
Me and him have a little fight every time about marijuana because he still thinks that people put babies in microwave ovens and nuke them thinking they're turkeys.
When they're stoned.
Yeah. So he's still back in those, you know, he's 80 years old. And,
yeah.
You know, God bless him.
Yeah. Well, some of those stories, which were probably not entirely apocryphal, only I don't think it had to do with reefer. I think it might have had to do with bad acid. But whether those stories were true or not, they certainly have a lifespan, don't they? I mean, they just keep on going.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway. I wanted to say that he was also a retired chaplain from the Army.
Really?
Yeah. And he's an agnostic. And he had a lot of problems because when Martin Luther King was alive, he took me on a march with him behind Martin Luther King, and I was on his shoulders. And I was, as I recall, I was the only white little kid there.
Uh-huh.
And he had me on his shoulders, and all the black people were coming up and saying, you know, how proud they were and all this stuff. And anyway, he cut in a lot of crap from that in the Army. He only retired as lieutenant colonel, vice a colonel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he always got a lot of crap. But anyway, I told jokingly, now I'm on Social Security disability and only make $1,300 a month. I can't realistically pay you $1 million to talk to my dad.
Yeah.
But I'd love to be a fly on the wall.
Well, I could probably learn a lot from your dad. Trust me.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sorry, I don't have enough to say, but I just love your show, man.
Well, thank you. Whatever you had to say, you said it quite well. Thanks a lot, Tom. I appreciate it. Okay. All right. Take care. Yeah. A chaplain who becomes agnostic. That military chaplain. That makes sense. I would imagine that someone of the highest ethical standards could, in a time or in a place of conflict, offer religious counseling to soldiers, 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds, who all of a sudden the bravado starts to fall away and they realize that they are about to possibly die or be grievously wounded, maybe have their lives altered permanently. And regardless of what they were told in basic, all of a sudden they start to realize, hey, wait a second, I'm not really fighting over here for mom and the flag and apple pie. So I can see how someone like Tom's dad could find themselves or choose to be a spiritual counselor in those kinds of situations to help kids who obviously have been inculcated with religious beliefs of a certain sort and beliefs about what they're doing in a combat zone. Taken together, those two can be extremely lethal and deadly, especially to the young person, be it male or female, who happens to be dealing with both. So my respect to your dad, Tom, for sure. Robin is driving in California, listening on Sirius. Robin, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Israel, the one ally that we have that can spy against us at any time it wishes. I wish AIPAC would get the hell out of our government.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we don't mess in theirs, or do we?
Well, the truth is we probably do. This relationship between the United States and Israel, you know, you decide who's the puppet and who's the puppeteer. We made a commitment 60 years ago that, as far as I'm concerned, was the wrong commitment insofar as it's lasted 60 years and has caused untold death and destruction in the Middle East. But we're kind of stuck with that commitment. We've invested probably close to $250 billion, if not more, in aid and providing the Israelis with grants and weaponry and all sorts of things. Back in the day when Israel was part of the chess game between the United States and the Soviet Union, they happened to be our chess piece. I think I realize this, Robin. I think most people have to understand this. This is the price that America pays for its cold, calculated ignoring of the death of 6 million people. The Roosevelt government knew full well what was going on in the death camps. They knew exactly.
Yeah.
But they did not respond. Now, is it justified for the Palestinian people to absorb what they have to absorb for a Jewish homeland?
I don't think so either,
but we have to understand to some degree, and I'm not cutting excuses for anybody. I'm just saying, floating above everything is the full knowledge, at least in my head, that if the United States had done something to take in Jewish refugees instead of turning them away, had done something to stop the slaughter of men, women, and children, we probably would not be in this situation today, but that's just me talking, so whatever.
Well, that's not actually what I call
I know, it, I know.
I'd have to agree with you on that.
Okay.
Barack today told American businesses, you make money in this country, you pay taxes in this country.
Yeah.
If you go into your online community there, you'll find that I made a posting a couple weeks ago. My name in there is Bluesman, and the title of the comment was, how are we going to pay for the stimulus?
Mm-hmm.
So you might check that out. It's basically saying what he said today. And one other thing, the swine flu, H1N1A,
right.
Neither one of those names apply. It should be called the NAFTA flu.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you on that one, Robin. And I think a lot of people who understand just how vile not just the exporting of jobs and from this country and corporations leaving, but some of the reasons they left, just to continue to gouge as much profit as they could out of workers, destroy the environment, just never ending, is it? Robin, thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers.
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Marge is calling from Maryville, Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Well, good evening, sir.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad for an old lady.
I thought maybe once again you had packed it up and moved to Chicago or something. No?
No. I'm still on this side of the line.
Oh, good.
I was just wanting to call you up and invite you to join me to celebrate Cuatro de Mayo.
Cuatro de Mayo?
Yeah.
Is that something they celebrate there in Maryville?
That's something I celebrate in my house.
I see.
You forgot.
I see. Okay.
You forgot.
It's your birthday.
Yeah. Congratulations. Go ahead.
How would I have forgotten? I just said it's your birthday. Well, happy birthday. How old are you now?
I'm old enough to vote.
Yeah. Okay.
Now that I do like they do in Illinois, vote early and vote often.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's
Chicago style.
Yeah, that's from the days of Richard J. Yeah.
That's Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow.
Well, good.
Don't you like the new law proposal?
Oh, the ones where corporations are going to have to pay some taxes.
Do you think it's about time?
Yeah. I mean, and that these rich, sneaky bastards can't hide everything and avoid paying their share. You don't have overseas bank accounts, do you, Marge?
Hell, I'm lucky to have an undersea bank. What's the opposite of that?
I have no idea. This is getting too confusing. A domestic bank account.
Okay. I heard today that there's some place in Cayman, the same address, that according to the GAO has over 1,000 businesses that doing U.S. corporations doing business there.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Isn't that interesting?
Huh? And
it must be one hell of a big building.
And some people say that there ain't nothing wrong with American capitalism. I mean, my God, if these corporations have to pay taxes, well, hell, they won't be able to hire anybody. Of course, they're not hiring anybody anyway, right?
Well, you notice. You notice that too?
I know.
They lie so free and easy. Oh, geez.
Well, I'm glad.
You know they're lying because their mouth is moving.
That's
right?
True. I've got some problems with a couple of things that Obama has done, but I'll tell you what. So far, he's pretty much doing what he said he would do.
There's a second part to that, and I don't know whether it came from his mouth or somebody hit one of his friends.
Yeah.
But the Consumer Finance Bill of Rights. So these credit card companies specifically can't make all these
right.
changes without notification, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it has to be in language that, you know, simple people can understand.
Oh, that means you and I will know what it means then when we open our credit card bills, right?
Oh, God. They're beyond belief.
I know.
These goofballs.
I know.
So, anyhow, listen, I wanted to... a little something just as a reminder. You'll probably have to. Now, it's not VCR anymore. It's TiVo, right?
Sure.
I'm learning.
Yeah?
I'm not totally electronically challenged, but I'm a little slow.
Yeah?
Thursday, your old favorite station, ABC.
WLS in Chicago?
Well, nationwide, because it's the thing with Michael J. Fox.
Oh, ABC network. Okay.
Yeah, TV network.
Right.
The Adventures of an Incurable Optimist.
And that's coming on when?
Thursday night, at 10, 9 central.
Does he talk about Rush Limbaugh?
No, but the point that kind of made my ears grow up, you know, he spent some time in some Himalayan country, Bhutan, is that a name?
Bhutan, yeah.
And some because of the high altitude or whatever, it sort of helped relieve some of his Parkinson's symptoms, but their attitude towards life is a little bit different. And the optimistic outlook on things and whatever. But one of the things, when I saw it, I thought, well, okay,
yeah.
I can go along with that.
Yeah.
One of the places he stopped looking, because he was looking for optimists and they're incurable, is Wrigley Field. be nice.
Okay. For those who don't know, it's the home of the Chicago Cubs. So they looked in Wrigley Field for optimists.
Yeah, and that's one kind of an optimist that I am. I'm a Cub fan from way back.
Yeah, yeah, you are. I've always known that about you. It shines through, and bless you for it, right? All right, listen, Marge, I got to go.
One last question. Who was that thing in The Good Life? Was that Tony Bennett?
Yeah, that was Tony Bennett.
Must have been a younger year because it sounded loud and clear.
Yeah, it sounded like he could still sing. Yeah, no, that was not that long ago, maybe 20, 25 years ago. Listen, happy birthday, okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right.
You behave yourself.
Oh, listen, I have to. I'm married. Thanks, Marge. I appreciate you checking in. Oh, God, you got to love Marge, right? All right, we have a break here. Start the music. There you go. We'll be back after the break and more of your phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday. All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, there's a shadow hanging over me. I'm not half the man I used to be. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why?
He's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow night, join us. You will have as an extra special treat, still at no additional cost or anything, the next episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. This one, not only written by Bob Alexander, but also produced by Bob Alexander. So you want to stick around. Tomorrow night, Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. They're getting more and more interesting. Also, this is the time when I say, hey, listen, if you're not a podcast subscriber yet, please consider doing that. It'll cost you 25 cents a program. And on an annual basis, that works out to just a hair under $60 for a year. What? Yeah, $60 for a year. He doesn't mean a year. Yes, $60, under $60 for a year. We really, really, truly, deeply, madly need your support. And we offer the podcast as a means of keeping the program on the air. So if you've been considering becoming a subscriber to the Malloy Show podcast, please do so as quickly as you can. we're certainly not on the verge of ending the program by any means, but we would like to make sure that this show will be around more than 1 year. So do subscribe if you've been considering it. Do subscribe. We would appreciate it a great deal. Martha calling from Torrance, California. Hey, Martha.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Boy, you tell it like it is. Your truth, you know. Truth to the power.
Well,
anyway,
okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Martha. I'm sorry.
Okay, yes. Regarding being incensed about Jane Harmon, we are. We protested her last Wednesday in front of her office.
Oh, really?
A group of us did, yes. We were very incensed by her outrage. Of course, everything you said, I agree with, but especially that she was outraged that she felt it was an abuse of power when she was wiretapped, when she voted for the FISA compromise.
Isn't that a scream?
Allowed the telecom industry companies immunity and allowed them to wiretap the American citizens.
What do you call that attitude, Martha?
Well, I call it criminal.
Criminal hypocrisy.
Arrogant.
Let me ask you, is Marcy's last name Winograd or Winograd?
Winograd, she's trying to call you.
Winograd.
Yes, Winograd.
Gotcha.
And she is running against Harmon. She's officially running against her.
Oh, good, good.
2010.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you have any idea what her chances are? Obviously, you're an activist out there. What are her chances?
Right. Well, I've talked to a few people, not enough people, but they say she has a good chance.
Mm-hmm.
She won 38% of the vote the first time around in less than 3 months.
Well, that's...
And now with this scandal of corruption with Harmon, I think she has a very good chance. We have enough time to get the votes in.
Well, that's good. If you have her ear...
she's listening to you right now.
Well, I would love to get an email from her. We would love to put her on the air. Did we have her on the air last political season, Kathy? I'm very embarrassed here, but I do not remember. So much has happened since then. But I'd like to put Marcy on in a heartbeat.
Wonderful. Well, she is trying to reach. I kept on redial. I'm thrilled that I got in. Yeah, we had. Basically, what we had out there is we belong to different, I'm a progressive, of course. I belong to different groups, but we went under the auspices of just constituents being, incensed.
Mm-hmm.
And ours was, our petition was resign, Harmon, resign, shilling for Bush's war, silent mm-hmm. about FISA's violations, complicit in torture, allegedly waddling in to influence a criminal case. You don't represent us, Jane Harmon. Do the honorable thing. Resign Harmon.
Well,
that was our petition. We had close to about 140 signatures on there in a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we were out there with signs. We had a little article in the Daily Breeze. Our local paper, the Daily Breeze, even had a question of the week. Should Harmon be investigated? And people did write in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think it's a shame. I don't care what political party someone is part of. When they try to obstruct justice in order to get a political appointment, in her case, to head the House Intelligence Committee. If we allow people like that to stay in office, what are we saying?
Go ahead. We need someone like Marcy, who represents the referendum to end the Iraq and Afghanistan occupation, Gaza siege, a congressperson who promotes diplomacy and peace in the world. And, Jane Harmon doesn't fit the bill. We need someone that honors the Constitution, upholds their oath to the Constitution, and follows the rule of law.
Well,
in my opinion, Jane Harmon does not fit that bill.
Obviously not. I'll tell you what, if you would, Martha, if you could get word to Marcy, if she will email our producer, Kathy@MikeMalloy.com. That's all she has to do. Kathy with a K.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy@MikeMalloy.com. Send an email, and Kathy will get in touch with Marcy, and we'll put her on the air.
Wonderful.
We'd love to do it. Okay?
And thank you for the service you do to all of the listeners.
Well, you're welcome. All right, Martha, take care. Take care.
Bye.
All right, thanks for checking in. Yeah, I don't remember if we, I think we did, didn't we, Kathy? I can't remember either. Time just rips by when you're having fun and your brain gets all clogged. Yeah, I know. Michael is calling from the Bronx, listening on the internet. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, ready for hanging in there. And I have a birthday coming up next month. I'll be 42. And before I get to what I was about to discuss, you and Kathy coming to New York City anytime soon?
No, I don't think so. And I'll tell you why. It costs money to go to New York City. And right now, just about everything we have goes into the program to keep it going.
Oh. Okay.
But, maybe, eventually. We've got a lot of friends up there, and I love coming to the city. I absolutely love it. So we'll get there eventually, but probably not this year.
Okay. No, I just keep a lookout, and et cetera. But what I wanted to discuss was about Obama's proposals to make the rich GOPs pay their fair share of the taxes, which I love.
Yeah.
I have a few questions about that, though.
Yeah.
If I can brief you in on what's been going on.
If you can do it in less than a minute.
All right, I'll try my best.
Okay.
When you have a former mayor and a former governor that was squandering the budget,
yeah,
and the budget's been in a sinking hellhole even before this stimulus package, would that be fit of what Obama is trying to, reform or correct? And is that something for him to look at? Especially with the stimulus package that's going out to each state that is in need of it or has requested help.
Well, it probably would be a good thing for an expanded Justice Department to take a look at political corruption across the map of the United States. Here's the problem. Unless federal crimes are involved or the suspicion of federal crimes, there's really nothing the Justice Department can do. It's up to state attorneys general or state prosecuting attorneys to handle that. As far as what Barack Obama said today, that he would like to see Congress enact, and that is to replace a fairness in taxation where it concerns these corporations. You understand, of course, Michael, that that's going to take a legislative action. It's going to take the House and the Senate to come up with some kind of a law. And you know, I said it earlier tonight. I'll say it again. Some of Obama's most fierce opposition to this is going to come from Democrats, because corporate America has polluted and corrupted totally the political system in this country. Totally, I mean, completely. Probably to a certain degree, and I know all the leftists out there laughing and screaming and slapping their hands right now, but probably to a certain degree, Barack Obama himself. But Obama, I don't believe is a corrupt politician. I just don't think he is.
I don't believe it either.
He's like I said, I've said several times, he's doing some things that certainly get my attention. That's not what I want him to do. But by God, he is following through on 95% of his promises so far, isn't he? I mean, that he made during the campaign. I don't like what he's doing with these predatory banks. I don't like this defending Bush administration policies or Bush era policies regarding wiretapping and, warrantless wiretapping and the rendition stuff. I don't know what that's about. I hope he gets his act together and stops that. But as far as going after these filthy corporations, Michael, I agree with you. It's about damn time that these predators were defanged or declawed. Michael, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. All right, Truth Seekers, we got a break here. Two open lines. Come on, if you want to get it said tonight, 877-996-2556. Ten before the hour. Thanks to our crew. Kathy Bay, who engineered the program tonight. Ben Birch, our technical director. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, our economics correspondent. And Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who advised the program from an ethical standpoint. A lot of people say, what do you mean by that? What do you mean they're your ethical advisors? No, we don't have teleconferences about the ethical center or lack thereof at this program. I just know that if I do something really out there, that one of them will send me an email and call me on it. I'm having another one of those senior moments, Kathy. I'm trying to think of a name. I can't think of it. Oh, well. Give you a hint? If I could give you a hint, I would know the name. I mean, come on. Anyway, tomorrow night we will play for you the next edition of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe that got put in the can today, as they say in the movie business. We put it away, put it in the can, put it to bed. It is, I think it's one of the more intriguing episodes of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. And whereas in the past they have been written by Bob Alexander, produced by Catherine Bay, this one is written and produced by Bob Alexander. So we're going to make sure that he gets all the credit. And so when the residual money comes rolling in, he'll get all the, rewards. You're right. But anyway, I hope you're going to be here tomorrow night for that because we think it's a pretty good script. What else we got here as the program winds down into a fond memory? I am still kind of fascinated by this group that is, trying to put together, trying to redefine the Republican Party. The name sounds a lot like Project for a New American Century. Of course, it isn't. It is modeled, I guess, on Newt Gingrich's contract with America, as he stated it back in 1993 and 94. I read something today at where Crooks and Liars or one of the websites that the pig man today went on his program and just ripped it all to pieces and said it's a terrible idea that this organization should not be out there on a listening tour. It should be out there on a teaching tour. You see, the pig man wants to teach America about what? I don't know. The pig man and his cohorts have had years and years, especially during the Bush years, to reinforce and shore up the Republican Party in this country, to do what Karl Rove talked about when he was hallucinating, and that was a permanent Republican majority. Remember that? Isn't that a cute phrase? Huh? Boy, that's so first decade of this century, right? A permanent Republican majority. Well, Limbaugh, the pig man now, is saying, no! No, no, they should be out there talking about that! They should be out listening! They should be leading! Leading into what, of course, is always the question. Limbaugh is truly, he is unique. He is unique, in American political, discourse. He is unique in radio. He, as far as I know, is the only Nazi, pure, Hitlerian Nazi to occupy this grand position of power where he is the voice of one of, our political parties. It's astonishing. Even Father Coughlin didn't make this big of a farting noise every time he opened his mouth the way Rush Limbaugh does. But it's incredulous to me that people either take Limbaugh seriously in the political realm, like Michael Steele, the titular head of the Republican Party, who so quickly demonstrated what his real function is with the Republicans, right? He used to add, how do I say this, a little color to the Republican Party. But Steele was so quick to, as Limbaugh likes to put it, bend over and grab his ankles for the pig man. There's a switcheroo for you, right? But Limbaugh today on his program, according to Crooks and Liars or one of the websites, categorically said that everybody involved in this new effort, first of all, Limbaugh does not like Jewish folks. So obviously Eric Cantor is going to rub Rush the wrong way. And Limbaugh said that the only person involved in all this that had any value whatsoever was Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush, you know, the former governor of Florida. We'll probably try to capture some of that sound for you tomorrow night. It is just astonishing stuff. And the other thing, if you're a fan of Rush Limbaugh's, bless your heart, pay close attention to what he is doing here, because I have a feeling, gut level feeling, he's not going to be around too much longer. I saw a picture of him today that was taken within the past week, and the man is becoming like a Macy's Day Parade balloon. I mean, there was a time there back when he was doing OxyContin when, you know, he lost a lot of weight. He lost about 150, maybe 200 pounds, but it's all come back, only it's really, really bad. Now, you can't live that kind of lifestyle. Limbaugh obviously gets no exercise, eats a lot of meat, smokes his cigars, puts his rather well-padded ass into a golf cart whenever he wants to play golf. So if you are a Limbaugh fan, you're going to have to, you're just going to have to focus on the boy, because I have this visceral feeling that, well, you know. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.